Experience the power of hands-on learning with CloudShare. Want to build a truly impactful customer education program? Hands-on learning is key, but traditional labs are both expensive and cumbersome. Introducing CloudShare, the cloud-based platform that lets you create secure, scalable training labs in just minutes. Imagine giving your customers, partners, and employees a safe, hands-on environment to learn your software, creating compelling, engaging experiences that wow your users, eliminating the hassle and the cost of managing physical labs. CloudShare empowers you to deploy customized learning environments in just minutes, provide access to the latest software versions and configurations, track progress and gather valuable insights, and even more, collaborate with your students. With CloudShare, your training program goes from ordinary to extraordinary. Check them out today at cloudshare.com.
Welcome to C-Lab, the place where we C-Lab and you want to be lab. I'm Adam Evermescu.
No, I'm Dave Darrington, and we're here again.
Oh my God.
We're here together.
We're back together. Back at last.
Experimenting new approaches. You know,
reading the intro. And most importantly, you know, sometimes we talk about sharing a beer. And I think a fantastic day. National Hazy IPA Day. Dave, did you know that?
It's the best day ever. Me being a Pacific Northwesterner, it is my thing. So I did not know that. Thanks.
Pacific Northwest?
What's that?
Are hazy IPAs Pacific Northwest? I thought hazy was...
IPA in general is very popular.
Yeah, IPA.
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
I think of the Pacific Northwest as being the like super hoppy ones. No, here in Amsterdam, hazy IPAs are also becoming very popular. So the influence is spreading across the Atlantic.
Ooh. Ooh. High alcohol, high hops.
High times. All right. Well, Dave, I look to you as always to frame this up. Do you want to? You want to be
a
framer?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, and this is a good one. And the reason we're together here and bringing that Adam Dave vibe back is because, hey, you know, again, at C-Lab, one of the points is that we have a journey. We're on a journey together, all of us, and we're learning things, we're sharing things. You and I had a discussion recently that was about, okay, you said, well, what are you doing in consulting work? And I had said something about... I'm learning some really interesting things. And to frame this up, again, what I've been doing has been working a lot more with a broad set of people over the last 3 years, working at Service Rocket and now on my own. And I'm starting to see some new emergent trends. And the trends are more like, okay, well, I thought I needed to do a strategy and have a framework and have these other things in place when I went to engage with people. And it turns out, you know, that's not so accurate, and that's not actually the best way to go about things, especially in our field. And that's where we got into talking about listening, which is sometimes hard.
Sorry, right? What did you say? Can you repeat that?
No, you can only say it one time, Adam. That's it. You missed it. It's over. You have to get the transcript and the recording.
Okay, sorry, I was on my phone. I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah.
Okay, listening. Let's say more about that, Dave.
Yeah, and that is okay. You know, when you go and you're really working and trying to deeply discover and investigate and learn from someone, from an environment. Let's say we have a new job and we enter into that environment. We come in with our own thoughts, ideas, and everything, and we need to move quickly in our field. There's pain. There's leadership pain. We need speed. But what I'm finding is the validation that models and frameworks are not a cure-all. They're not a panacea. Mm-hmm. When you're working in this field of customer education and in software as a service, what do you think about that? I mean, I know to frame it up, that's where I'm coming from. Our discussion is we need to change some of the ways we approach learning about learning and getting to solutions.
Yeah, I guess, like, you know, this is usually in one of these episodes where we would have a hypothesis that we wanted to explore.
Yeah,
if you go back and listen to the old episodes of C-Lab, we used to always have a hypothesis when it was me and Dave talking. And here, I don't know that I have a pure hypothesis around this, but I have at least like a straw man argument that we can debunk, which is it probably goes something like when you are first starting a customer education program, or when you are consulting on a customer education program, the most important thing is the strategy and the framework that you use. And I think that's it doesn't sound controversial to say that, but we think in our experience that hypothesis might actually be false. So I'd love to get into that, because I agree. I think, you know, strategy and frameworks exist for a reason. It's all too common that people build up customer education programs, or, you know, even think about some of our very close peer teams, community, digital customer success. People kind of back their way into them by doing things. So all of a sudden they're executing, and there's no strategy whatsoever behind it, which is why I think people say, hey, you need a strategy, you need frameworks, you need a maturity model to kind of show you where you should be headed. But I think you could argue the opposite of that is true as well, that, you know, very few strategies on paper survive execution. So really, like, whether your strategy is effective or not is only as well as you can execute it. So I don't know. I think that's my starting point.
Yeah, that I think you're starting from, why do we have that feel? Why do we feel like we need to have the strategy? And it makes sense, but it doesn't always work out, right? And I'll just share some personal professional experiences where I got to the point where I think I'm at that, you know, if you have a curve of, hey, I've learned this stuff and I've learned really well, and then now I'm like, really think I've commanded understanding of the market enough to spend time to build a strategy or an approach. And then now I'm way on the back end of that, where I go, well, maybe it's a combination of a couple of things. This is why we wanted to explore this, that, okay, I don't feel like I need it as much, or I sometimes don't need it at all. And to be able to successfully navigate and learn from people, which is, we put a quote in there, best laid plans never survive first contact with the enemy. Looked up Moltke the Elder. That's really profound.
Is that one of your friends?
Yeah, from the 1800s. Actually, the earliest person to have a recording of their voice.
What, which really?
Yeah, you look at Wikipedia about it, but I thought, I was looking through this, and this guy was like a war strategist, all this stuff.
I thought this was like some sci-fi person. I have no idea who Moltke
is. I did too. I mean, what kind of name is Moltke? Well, no, he was a pretty sharp guy. He was in Prussia. He was a Prussian leader.
Okay.
Anyway, but that was a project management mantra. Hey, you have a great plan. It's not going to succeed. It's not going to stay that way. And I think, like, what we're talking about is that we've gotten to a point now in customer education where I think we can have a strategy, and it mostly works, but it's not an end all and be all, particularly when you're in certain places, you know? What do you think? We want to start to peel that back. Stunned into silence.
Or internet connections. So, okay. Yeah. Like, let's cue off that. So
yeah,
you're kind of getting at, all right, like, we think that ultimately a strategy is only as good as its execution, but, like, maybe we can dig in a little bit first. Like, why do we really feel like we have to have a strategy? Why is strategy appealing to us? Like, why is that our first port of call that we go when we think, like, I'm going to design a program, the first thing I need to do is have an airtight strategy?
Just going through my notes or my mental notes, one, it makes you look a little bit more put together and professional, right? Where, oh, you know, like, on paper, look at this. I've got this maturity model, or I've got this diagnostic, or this way of thinking, and these are the stages we're going to go through, and these are the things we're going to be asking, and the questions we're going to come up with.
And that for me actually brings a feeling of comfort in, and particularly in engagement with people that I don't know. And I go, okay, I can rely on this. We just step through it, keep grinding through it. However, it's kind of stultifying it in one respect when it, and I've done this before. I used to work in management consulting where I was more of a steamroller, right? It played an infrastructure, a foundation for me. But then after engaging and learning people and understanding what they're doing and actually listening, there's better ways. And you can start asking the right questions in the right time and not being beholden to a structure.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And I mean, there's a difference, I guess, between like having a strategy, because a strategy is a set of principles for the decisions that you make. Maybe we should actually define strategy, but there's a difference between like strategy and operating from a rigid framework. So I think sometimes it's a misconception about what a strategy is. It's like, we think we have this really well-designed framework that we're offering or that we're operating off of, and it's based on these principles that have worked in these situations across different customer education functions, and it's rooted in industry best practices, then we are going to be able to come into a new organization. And yeah, of course, every organization is a little bit different, and there are, you know, we're gonna have to tailor that strategy. There's still kind of the idea that like, oh, the strategy is really what's going to guide me through that. And I think, at least in my experience, yes, there are definitely some best practices that you can use in any organization that you walk into. And often, in fact, your success as you become a more seasoned customer education leader is due to your ability to pattern match and to say, hey, I see this situation, I see this problem statement. So I think this type of solution is probably the type of thing that's going to work, but you need to test that. And it actually has not that much to do with how well developed your strategy is or how adherent it is to a framework. It's actually how you're able to adapt. But like, maybe it's a good time for us to kind of define like what is a strategy actually, because I think that the reason why we talk about wanting a strategy in the first place is because when you don't have it at all, the consequence is that you're going to be working really reactively. And we know, especially for those of us in SaaS software, life comes at you fast and you're going to get pulled between priorities. So one day an executive is going to come to you and say, this is important, do this. And the next day they're going to come say, no, this is important, do this. And you need some way, like some yardstick, to be able to say, hey, is this the thing worth doing? Is this something I should say yes or no to? Is this something that I have the competencies to really execute on, or where I can really deliver value, or my function can really deliver value? And I think part of the reason why we end up getting pulled into this like loop of just doing stuff is because it's not even because we don't have a strategy, it's because we can't really articulate our value to the business. We do stuff and we talk about the stuff we're doing, so then we just get asked to do more stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, invariably, yeah. Well, I got a question for you on that, because you and I and others, our peers, our network, I think echo this, right? This being reactive, getting pulled around. And what have you seen more recently, when now you're a much more senior leader and that strategy label, you know, we're looking at one of the threads is, this gives us a seat at the table because we're a strategist now. We have this impetus behind us, this structure behind us that helps us be more successful. Does it? How? That's what I'm curious about. And that's why we need to break it down more.
Yeah. I mean, yes, like strategy does. Well, I don't know. Does strategy give you a seat at the table? When you're at the table, you need a strategy, I guess, right? Because you need to be able to talk about what your team, what your function is there to do for the business. And so insofar as strategy is very clearly defining what you are here to do and helps you select the right tactics to be able to do that,
mm-hmm.
and also tells you what you are not here to do or what you're not going to be best at, like, to me, that's as much of a strategy as you need. And that doesn't necessarily mean a framework. That means you can clearly articulate, like, hey, you know, and by the way, I think being able to articulate in business terms what
in
you're
business
to do.
Terms,
so,
yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, so I think like actually one way to think about strategy is to think about, what does the business care about? What is the business looking to you to do? Because the business isn't really looking to you to create content. That's the thing you do. they're not looking to you to deliver training. That's the thing you do. But like, what are the results and what are the impact and what's your guiding light? So for example, you might really be at the company primarily to drive gross margin. So mm-hmm. what does that mean? That means the main thing you do is you yourself as a team operate efficiently, but you're also here to help the rest of the company operate efficiently. So most of what you do, most of the decisions you're going to make, optimize and prioritize for that. You might be here at the company to drive gross revenue retention. What does that mean? Protecting renewals, making sure the customers don't churn, that they don't downsell. So you're going to be really focused on driving things like activation and adoption that are upstream predictors of those. You're going to be working with your data team to understand what are the things that I can be doing before the customer even thinks that they're not going to renew. What are the risk signals that we can look at? What sort of content or programs do we need to put in place to make sure that doesn't happen? You could be right. here to drive lead generation or, right? There's like a million different things, but you sort of have to be able to look to the higher levels of the business and say, and it might be multiple things, but I think some of the mistakes we make are, number one, just not starting with anything, right? We just do stuff and then we can never really talk about what we're here to do for the business aside from create content to deliver training. Another mistake we make is we try to be the everything team. So in fact, like I used to describe customer education in a certain way that I usually don't anymore because I don't think it's super helpful to talk about it this way. Like I used to sometimes say like customer education is sort of like the warm blanket that sits on top of your other metrics as a SaaS business. It's not a wet blanket. Well, I mean, if you're not engaging, I guess it's a wet blanket. Yeah. No, but like that's it, right? Like what I meant is, you know, we can drive outcomes throughout the customer lifecycle and throughout the business. And while that's true, I think what that does is from really being able to describe what's the main thing we're here to do. These almost like territorial contests with other departments where we're like, well, and if you don't sit on marketing's like, okay, but we do that too. So, you know, how deeply involved are you trying to be in that? So you might end up duplicating efforts if you just kind of say you're here to do everything. And
that's a good point.
Yeah, I think I would stop there. There was a third thing that I was thinking about, a third mistake, but I can't remember it right now. I'm sure we'll get back to it.
Hey, listeners. Recently, I ordered some new equipment for the C-Lab podcast. When a couple of weeks had passed, I still didn't have it. I hopped online to check the tracking details. Yep, for sure, my order made it from overseas to the U.S. within only a few days, but then it got stuck in a postal warehouse nearby for almost a week. And then it hit me. It's the classic last-mile problem. For product suppliers, the most expensive and complex part of getting a product delivered to your customer's doorstep isn't the hundreds of miles traveled at the beginning of its journey. It's that final mile. Sound familiar? That's because it's the same with customer education. We create expert learning content for customers and users, and then what? Just 5% or less of that is sometimes actually even viewed. Most everything we create is at the mercy of CSMs and our customer admins themselves, and if they don't proactively push this material along to our users, most of them aren't going to go looking for it on their own. So, we're excited to share that Brainstorm is solving this last mile problem for customer education teams. Brainstorm enables you to empower your customers with turnkey end user training campaigns, including adaptive learning flows, events, emails, surveys, and more. Customers just have to hit go. Learn more and get a free 90-day trial today when you visit brainstorminc.com/CELab.
Yeah, I really like how you're paring that down and breaking into that, because what you're alluding to is more of, okay, you're not an everything bagel. You don't have all the things in it, right? You're not everything to everyone. You might think of yourself that way. We might think of ourselves that way sometimes. And then I get overwhelmed, right? Because, you know, if we go back to thinking about what if I were to say strategy, the word strategy, here's, okay, let's do this. 2 years ago, I came up with a program called the Customer Education Strategy Workshop. And it was the pin, the framework, and the diagnostics that I would need to like really open up and unlock a client I'm working with that I don't know. And that what I found in that is, okay, this is really important because it's structured, right? We do this, and then we do this, we do this, we're gathering information, we're talking to people. Where I was kind of emulating the thing that we have learned, Adam, by engaging with many companies and seeing how this goes and trying to consolidate it down. But what I also found is that, you know, it's too much. It's heavyweight. It's now, no, I want to talk about this thing. This thing is most important. Wait, we'll get to that. No. What I've come back to learn again from that is boomeranging back to, I'm here to listen to you and just talk for a while. What are the pain points that you have? We'll get to this later, but there's a certain time and a place to do those things that we need to get done. Right. So that heavyweight for me was just way, way, way too much.
You know, strategies fall apart if you can't execute on them, and podcasts fall apart if you can't get a solid internet connection in the booth you're sitting in. So,
oh, that's so much better. Goodness.
Wonderful. All right. Well, here we go. Cool. So yeah,
so much better.
So let's talk about that, right? You've defined by and large, like, the pitfall is trying to adhere too much to a theoretical framework, and the
right,
you know, the better solution is in many ways to listen and to really pay attention to what's going on in the business. So why don't we take those apart? Let's talk about maybe what's the problem with frameworks first. Like, why don't you see frameworks as equaling?
Okay, so here's what I've experienced after being it, and let me do a minor frame up by saying that as being who I am, and between what we do at C-Lab and talking with lots of people and networking, the work I'm doing more of now is, hey, I'm being asked to come in and really learn, like really help somebody with a problem. And I need to get to that quick. But now in a framework, if I'm going through a very rigid structure and say, we'll do this, you're holding back a dam. Right? You're also missing kind of the nuances where I need to let a certain amount of conversations happen organically. And I always feel, you know, I'm rushed. I want to get things done. But if we don't really connect and get into the weeds to the point where we're finding and really connecting with the true problems, and sometimes they come out really quick if you're just listening, that, you know, I can't steamroll things. I need to have a nuanced approach. I was looking at my notes and I thought it maybe the reference may be lost on folks who Columbo is, a detective. I think it was the 70s, I think, Peter Falk. And okay, I even remember this. Yeah, I know. My mom watched it all the time. But the character's cool. I mean, this guy was kind of bumbling and he just kind of walked along. I'm not identifying. Well, maybe. Just kind of had this method out or this approach where he's just listening and then asking the right questions at the right time. And then a house of cards would unfold right underneath him. And I think that kind of, and I see that it's when you listen and you find the nuances to every educational problem we're encountering, then it's easy to kung fu, you know, like roll with that and actually start working on that solution while you're still gathering other information. That's something I missed, like that kind of nuanced, approach where I organically allow people to unpack and then we can get on track with a more, you know, more project type thing. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. And maybe this, I don't remember if this is the third mistake that I was going to highlight, but I think it's a valid one, is that sometimes we get a little bit hung up on either, you know, like, okay, we go to conferences and we hear, hey, customer education can do this, customer education can do that. And we really try to, you know, jump in and highlight that. And it might even be that we can describe that in business terms, but we're missing what's actually most important to this business and what's most important to this business right now. So the more you hear that, the more you hear what your executives are talking about, the way they're talking about it, the more you talk to people around the business, around what they care about, how they're looking at things, it helps you develop more of a well-rounded picture about like what is strategy? Strategy is ultimately about what problems you can solve, right? Your strategy is how you solve problems or deliver on opportunities, I suppose, is like the also the positive way of looking at that.
Yeah.
For the business. And it's really hard to do that if you are coming at it from a really kind of generic point of view where you're saying like, oh, like I went to this industry conference and I learned the customer education can do A, B, and C. Well, if A, B, and C don't matter to your business right now, then you're not going to have that seat at the table. So I think sometimes that's actually the disconnect is like we talk to our industry peers and we get in a little bit of a bubble where we have an idea of the value of customer education or of our field. And that really resonates with other people who do what we do. And it sounds really inspiring. But then we go back to our businesses and it doesn't really get the attention of people who are thinking about completely different things. So that's
this case is a failure of us to live.
Yeah. I got lost you there.
Okay. Well, I'm still here.
Hey. Yeah, okay. It kind of. So it's a failure of us.
Isn't it
to...
ironic? It's ironic that we're talking about listening to and our internet is.
And then we're having listening challenges.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know, one other, while you were going through that, one other thing that popped into mind was an experience that I had over the years. And it what came out of this really bothered me because I was kind of barreling forward on a very fast timeline, trying to gather a bunch of information. And as I engage with people more of an, you know, look, I'm not going to come in and say like, I'm everybody's friend, blah, blah, blah. You can talk to me. But in many ways, I have become somewhat of a therapist or a coach in a real context, right? It's Dave, listen to me for a minute. Blah, 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 blah. I'm gonna tell you a story. And I slow down and I listen and I go, oh my God. Let's tell me more. And then I might take that and go to talk to another people. In one case, what I had found is that the real challenge of an organization I was working with was not the content they were producing, was not like the plan they had. It was simply that the people didn't have the space or the time, and that wasn't being communicated through the leadership. And once we slowed down enough to unlock that, that everybody's like, oh, you know, leadership, it was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was a nuance. It was a little thing that was a big thing.
Yeah. So, you know, I think maybe based on that, what we can say, because, you know, I don't want someone to listen to this podcast and come out with the impression that we're saying, like, just do whatever strategy is useless, right? Strategy is actually very useful. But
yeah,
exactly. Basing your strategy on more generic frameworks or maturity models that don't necessarily apply to your business or frameworks that like frameworks might just end up being really bulky and heavyweight and often not really implementable in a business. Like the best strategy is one that meets you where you are and takes you where you need to go. So like if I had to make a recommendation, I mean, first of all, like we talked about, it's listen and listen deeply. And maybe we can talk about some other ways to do that, you know, in a moment. But based on that, like basically what your strategy is you should be able to define really clearly what is the problem, what is the main problem or problems, what is the main opportunity or opportunities that you can address right now that will have an impact on the business. Like what is it that will actually help your business and your customers? And then, as you're solving that, what do you think the next problem or opportunity will be? And how can you start building some capabilities to be able to solve that so that you're not being reactive? You're actually getting ahead of what you think the next thing might be. And how do you know what the next thing might be? Because you're paying attention to the trends of your business, because you're hearing some of the problems that your customers might be talking about that haven't really gotten to the forefront yet.
Yeah.
Because you might have an idea of, hey, if the business plans to grow this much or if the business plans to expand into these markets, well, how am I going to get ahead of that? Like what can our team do to address that? And that I think is what gets you a seat at the table. It's not like the abstract idea of having a best strategy or being strategic. It's literally like a strategy is just how well are you solving and anticipating problems? And how are you making decisions about what not to focus on so that you can create enough room to solve the ones that really matter?
Yeah.
Like, I think you have a quote on this, but the one that I always think about is from Claire Hughes Johnson, and she wrote the book Scaling People. And I saw her speak once. She came and spoke actually for the leadership team at Personio, which was super cool. Wow. They organized that. And the way she put it was really simple. She said, strategy should hurt.
Whoa. Whoa.
If you're just, yeah, yeah. If your strategy is like just things you should do anyway, or if your strategy doesn't in some way imply a trade-off or allow you to say no to anything, then it isn't really a strategy. But not just that, right? It's the things you say no to should be tempting things to do as well.
Yeah. Wow, that's really profound. Strategy should hurt.
Claire Hughes Johnson, Scaling People.
Okay, another book for our book list, book club, I guess. So what, again, what you're saying here is this is being a leader, right? We're internalizing a strategic approach and we're executing on it. And I think when I work with folks, a lot of the things that I'm seeing challenges with is the ability to actually execute on anything, because a lot of the times the things that we have said strategically or the things we're going to work towards, I mean, it might not be the right thing in the right time in the right place. Why I say that is I'm kind of alluding to the podcast that we did with Jeffrey Moore about crossing the chasm. And why I bring that up is it's also part of this whole big picture. Again, when you go back and you think about, I'll say I've been guilty of doing this. I have a maturity model and a strategic framework and all that kind of stuff into my package of deliverables. Mm-hmm. And it gets in the way where it might be deceptive, because when I start talking with a company, you're kind of painting a picture of the people, the culture. Those things are really important. It's not the intrinsic culture, it's the extrinsic culture, it's the people they work with. And in SaaS, this is a really particularly interesting problem. We're also going, okay, if we're early, we're doing some things. Later, we're doing other things. Even later, we might be bigger and we can do even more things. And if we try to adopt a strategy that's worked for, say, some other big company, it's not going to fit. Yeah. And we're needing to right size things.
Yeah, I want to dig into this with you in a moment. But you know, one thing that you just said made me really think about this. Like when you think about something like a maturity model or a framework, like often a maturity model or a framework is not necessarily a handbook, right? That tells you what to do at one company. It's almost a synthesis or an aggregate of what is happening across multiple companies that may or may not have anything to do with the situation that you're walking into as a consultant, Dave, or the situation where a new customer education leader might be coming into a company and figuring out what to do. So, you know, you can look at that maturity model, for instance, and you can say, hey, you know what? I think we're roughly here. Here are some of the things that we're doing at this stage. Here are some of the things that we aren't doing. But like, you still need to be able to decide at some point, hey, you know, if we're at stage two and we're doing 4 out of the 6 things that this maturity model says we should be doing at stage two, is doing those other 2 things the most important thing to do? Or should we actually leave them be because they're not important to the business? Should we actually look at, you know, this thing from stage 3? Or, hey, are we actually falling behind on this thing from stage 1? You really need to be able to adapt that based on what's important to the business. So,
yeah.
Like, I'd be really curious, as much as you're comfortable telling, Dave, like, You mentioned you've had these situations where you've walked into engagements with the heavier weight frameworks, with the heavier weight models. Like, what happens when you try to use those? Like, how is it broken down for you?
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, it's really interesting to see in practice, and this is one of the things I really adore about the kind of work that I've been leading towards. Again, I think it goes back to you and I have partnered in this journey. And you've gotten to a really solid leadership thing where you're seeing all this stuff. What I've tried to do is go out and do the many and see in aggregate, what happens here? How do we summarize that? Can we do a strategy? And what I usually find is something like this. We'll get into discussions and meetings, and invariably we get very quickly to let's have a session with the leader, the CEO, or, you know, the executive suite. And at that point, things can change wildly, right? And at any time in that, someone could give me a bit of information, which totally derails a lot of the things and says, oh my gosh, okay, we've got a completely different situation. And now it's a way for me to tactfully, you know, roll with that and say, here's what I'm seeing. And I might even scrap a lot of the approach that I'm doing and say, that was more of our diagnostic. Now I talked to Jane, the CEO. Jane came in and we had a sidebar conversation and I understand something I didn't know at all. Mm-hmm. And that colors or, you know, it puts a different spin on the things that we're trying to accomplish, right? I might even be told, hey, but that's not really the problem. We have this. And I'll allow that freedom now to go and say, I'm going to pursue that for a while. And then I might initially say, let's do these things. Let's get things in the pipeline so I can learn more. So it's this telescoping, microscoping, moving in and out and actually trying to do like what you were saying is this thing is the most important thing right now. I didn't know that. That wasn't a part of a, if I'd done a rigid framework strategy, would never have gotten there.
C-Lab is proudly sponsored by Thought Industries. They've got a super robust tech platform to run your customer ed program, and they've built a think tank and community. Just look, they've released the Customer Education Playbook, a definitive book on customer ed for practitioners. They've released frameworks like maturity models, assessments, and toolkits, and they've got great community events like the Cognition Conference, roundtables, and discussion forums. But of course, there's also the Tech Forward platform. Thought Industries has developed a headless solution to allow for heavy customization and has a multi-tenant architecture built to scale custom learning portals to your client base to deliver personalized learning for different roles and groups. Check out Thought Industries as you grow and evolve your program, especially if you're doing things like adding paid subscriptions, using free or freemium learning in your marketing strategy, integrating your learning data into your org's overall data strategy, or learning data to prove ROI. Check them out at thoughtindustries.com and tell them C-Lab sent you.
Yeah. So, why don't we talk about that? Like how to actively listen in a way that gives you the information you need to propose.
Yeah, that's good.
A strategy and a set of tactics that are actually relevant to the business and are actually going to provide value. Like, I think we could both talk about this, but how do we do that?
Well, number one, here's my phrase to myself, just shut up, Dave, and listen.
Hey, I say that too.
I know you do. And actually that's, you know what, I'm going to be really vulnerable here. I have ADHD traits. So for me, it's really important sometimes to feel like I need to interrupt and say, oh, this thing, I got to talk about this thing. For someone like me, I actually have to consciously write a note down to myself and put cues in myself. It's like, just shut up, listen, everywhere, right? That's really hard for me as my personality kind of combats that. So if you're like me talking to our audience, it's important to slow down and listen. Because you're so smart and you know so much and you've discovered things and your opinion matters. But at the same time, you're a member of a fabric that's trying to solve problems together as a team. It's not about the Dave show or whatever.
I'm trying, like, as you were talking about that, I was trying to think, like, what's my active listening toxic trait? I think mine is, I think mine is that, like, I take a lot of pride in knowing stuff, right? So that
you
makes
do.
Me it gives me the tendency to be a know-it-all. So sometimes I'll be having a conversation, we'll be talking about, like, priorities, or I'll be, you know, asking about, you know, someone's opinion on how to move forward. And, you know, my first tendency sometimes, instead of, you know, really listening deeply, is to do one of two things, but like for this one, it's kind of be like, oh yeah, cool. Glad you said that. I thought of that and here's how I would do it. Right. When like actually, like saying like, I already thought of that is probably not the most important thing to do. Cause like, I probably thought of that among like 16 other things, right? Like that was probably like one thing that just like went through my brain at some point. So like, probably a better point to slow down and not just be like, not like prove what you know, but rather keep asking deeper questions that elicit more information, or use that like what I try to do sometimes is use that opportunity to be like, okay, interesting. Like, what does that look like to you? Or like, how would you, you know, if you could do that today and there were no limitations, how would you do that? And that gets you so much better information than proving that you already thought about something. I think my other active listening toxic trait that I think about sometimes is like, sometimes I can paralyze myself a little bit into inaction if I tend to play things out and I tend to think about second and third order effects and how things connect to each other. And that can be really helpful when you're trying to get your head around a complex issue, but it's not so helpful when you're trying to get your head around a less complex issue. And at some point it's like, okay, but just go, just like, we can just do it. We can make mistakes. It's okay. And I noticed this, by the way, even when like people on my team come to me and are trying to like galaxy brain a certain issue, then all of a sudden I feel like what it's like on the other side of that table. I would be like, okay, cool. I'm really glad we thought of that. But like, now what are we going to do?
Yeah. That, I like how you're saying active listening, toxic traits. And that's the galaxy brain. I've never heard that term. I really like that. I'm going to use it.
Galaxy brain is the meme where there's like four panels, and it starts with like an image of the brain, and then it goes like all the way down to like the brain opening up, and it's a galaxy.
Oh,
like,
that meme?
Google galaxy brain. You'll see.
Means. Okay. I know what you're talking about from the meme. Well, let me do this. We're going to keep our episode short here, but this is one of those really good. We're opening up and we're sharing our experiences. We'd like to hear yours too. Here are some of the five key elements that, of course, this is coming from an AI search. So give me cut some slack if it's not exact or it's been in a book. I kind of like this, where we synthesized information and we got pulled back five key traits, one being your focus and your attentiveness, right? To listen, I'm focused on listening. This is really something I try to do, is look into the camera, right? I bought a teleprompter, so now I can pay attention. Nonverbal cues, really, we could talk about that. I'm just going to list them, and then we can talk about them.
I'm so bad at reading nonverbal cues.
Yeah, well, it's hard when you're on a video. Summarizing, clarifying, then empathy and perspective taking. Empathy is a big one. And then the last one, silence, patience. I don't have either one of those capabilities. That's my toxic trick. I'll fill the room with loud talking, but I'm working actively all the time on that. What do you think about all those? I mean, I think your traits fit into those. These are not authoritative.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see those as good techniques for active listening. When I think about active listening, I also think about something that you talk about a lot, Dave, which is being an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
Like, there's always some thread to pull on in what someone says that will ultimately reveal deeper information. And that's not just important because you yourself want information. It's important because there might be something that person hasn't fully articulated or hasn't fully thought through that really is at the core of the issue. And so often in active listening, one of the best things you can do is try to find that dangling thread to pull on that will, you know, unlock parts of the conversation that neither of you would have gotten to on your own. So for instance, even kind of asking some of these active questions, like I think sometimes just like, you know, staring at the person and being like, I am actively listening to you is not going to get what you want. And neither is like trying to be really obnoxious about being investigative, right? Because like certainly like I can think back to earlier points in my career where like someone had been like telling me something and be like, okay, why? And then they would say something else and I'd be like, okay, why? And there's like a time to do that. That's a tactic that you can use in certain situations.
That's the interrogation version really of it, right?
Like, well, some people like really appreciate a good five whys, but like the spirit of collaboration has to be there to make that work. Mm-hmm. So rather like if you're asking questions like, okay, interesting, like why is that important to you? Or like, what would it look like if we did it that way? Or what's stopping us from doing it that way? Or, hey, you just said you wanted to do this initiative. Like, what do you think that would get us if we did it really well? What would the risk of not doing it be? I heard, this other person that we collaborate with have an opinion that we should actually do this for this reason. Like, how do you put those together, right? The more questions you can ask like that, the more well-rounded of a picture you're going to have about like what's actually important, and ultimately will give you more information about how to guide your own strategy and make decisions that work in context. So I think you do need, like, that's not going to work if you aren't focused, if you aren't reading nonverbal cues and you know when to stop or pull back or ask a different question.
Mm-hmm.
Summarizing and clarifying is a big one for me. I really love to do that. And often in a conversation, that's a role I really try to actively play, is I'll really listen to like, a bunch of threads of conversation, and I'll deliberately say, I'll be like, okay, hold on, I just want to make sure that I have this right. Like, if I understand the conversation so far, we are talking about X, Y, and Z, and this is what's important, et cetera, et cetera. And often that gives us an opportunity as well to create like a checkpoint in the conversation that makes sure A, we're on the same page, but sometimes in fact, like, makes it clearer what we're really trying to solve, because we're not just like going in circles anymore. We have a little bit of clarity on, okay, this is what this conversation is actually about. And you mentioned empathy and perspective taking. I think that's a really good one too, right? Empathy isn't sympathy. Empathy is really about putting yourself in that person's shoes. But if you're doing it right through active listening, one thing that I've learned from several leaders that I've worked with is that often empathy in an active listening situation is about being able to echo back both the content and the emotion behind something. Like, what is the person telling you, but also like, how do they feel about it, or why are they telling you in this way? And especially when you're talking to customers or when you're in a heated conversation, that's a really important point to make. And yeah, then, I mean, ironically for both of us, silence and patience, I agree. Like, giving the other person enough room to talk, not jumping in to dominate the conversation or share your own thoughts because you think they're really important, not spending the whole conversation waiting for the next thing to say. Like, I mean, these are good evergreen tips for sure. So yeah, I like these ones you put together.
I think, you know, we should wrap up. However, I really think for me, I know what I'm working on. I know what my toxic tricks are. I know I need to listen and, you know, be patient. And the one thing that's really gotten me the furthest, Adam, I think, is that empathy. That when I've actually slowed down and I sat down with an individual, a person, right? The things that I find that are so exciting about this role and the journey I've taken is I meet a lot of people and they're very diverse and they have a whole lot of different backgrounds and skills. Any of us that are a practitioner or leader has come from some place different. All of us are struggling with something. And a lot of the times it's hard, especially in a very enterprise-y, corporate-y culture, to give that voice, that feeling that we have, hey, I'm really struggling with something deeper. And it's only really when I become more of a, let's just talk, right? Let's just use 15 minutes and just talk about what's on our mind. Once I usually break through some of that and get to the person, then we understand. And again, I'm saying this for a real reason, because much of the time in our field of customer education, we're in a very fast moving environment. And that one place I had, we had a therapist on staff, a coach that would help us through a kind of SAS inspired PTSD. And the complications that came because of that were dire.
Yeah. Burnout is real.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, you also, like, maybe as we head into the wrap up here, I'll pull on one thread that you just mentioned, which is a lot of these things just aren't going to happen if you're only having your conversations async or through Slack or through email.
Yeah.
Or if you're only giving formal presentations, writing up formal docs and asking people for their feedback. So like, using both formal and informal channels and frankly, just picking up the phone or meeting in person, like, you know, will also just give you a whole lot of information and like let you create connections in different ways. And if you're only going through those more formal or written or, you know, kind of scalable channels.
Yes.
Good. So I think like maybe wrapping up, because I know we gotta bring things to an end. Maybe our listeners, if you're listening to this, get on LinkedIn and share your tips for active listening or what you have done to make your strategy really relevant to your business. Or if you're feeling really brave, share your active listening toxic trait with us.
Ooh, I like it. I like it a lot. All right. Well, let's take this out, right? If you want to learn more, we have our website, customer.education. You can find all of our stuff there. We also are part of the customer education community, is a larger community where you can connect, learn from, share your ideas with your peers, leaders who are making a difference. You can find us on LinkedIn. We're going to stop talking about Twitter, right? X.
Yeah, we're everywhere. X, formerly known as Twitter. Special thanks to Alan Coda for our theme music. And hey, as always, like, I know we say this at the end of every episode, but really, like, the most important thing that you can do that would really help this podcast out is by going to wherever you are listening to it and hitting the 5-star reviews. And if you want to leave a couple of words as well about what you appreciate about the show, or, you know, even what you'd like to see more of, that really helps us, but it also helps boost the reach of the podcast. So, you know, even if you're not going to go on LinkedIn and leave your toxic trait, we'd really appreciate if you could at least take the time right now to open up your podcast app, hit that 5 stars, and help us share what we do with the world.
Well said. All right, Adam, this was great. It's always amazing to get together in person, you and I, and just reflect and share what we're learning. So audience,
yeah.
Get out there, educate, experiment, and find your people. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.